Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kiley.
I'm Josh Hewitt.
I'm Judith Sanders.
And this is Engaging Culture, a podcast presented by Bridgeway Christian Church. On today's episode, we are talking about the fact that our beloved Pastor Judah is cruelly abandoning us.
Boo!
But we're going to talk a little bit about his decision to leave staff, what went into that, a little bit of what's coming next for him. We want to share our appreciation for him. And then we just want to take this opportunity to talk about how do you make healthy changes and transitions in your life. All three of us at the table have kind of a different perspective on this one, and we want to share some insights into how we can transition well when the time comes and manage those processes in our lives. All of that and more on this episode of Engaging Culture. All right, well, we are back. It has been a while. Thanks to a little website issue that interfered with our ability to post podcasts. Pastor Josh and I recorded a very mediocre episode that sadly will never see the light of day.
I also just want to let y'all know how much they value me being on this podcast, because I got the weeks confused and thought that we weren't recording the week we were recording. Nobody texted me, called me, nothing. Then people just said, well... So
no, them people just assumed you were showing up and then you didn't.
Yeah. And, you know, in general, you would send a text message and say, hey, well, where are you? You're being irresponsible or you're being
I
late.
At the moment.
Nothing.
That I forgot that I
had
became
no idea.
Your mother at some point in your life. You know, and you needed to manage
that's
that
true.
For you.
You did. I do remember that.
That was a contractual thing.
We had that whole ceremony. And, yeah. You're Judah's mother now.
I am.
These are the senior leadership. Senior.
Yeah.
Leadership team.
Yeah, I did not realize.
No accountability.
Hold your hand. Did you brush your teeth? I just started calling you every night. Honey, did you brush your teeth? Come
and
on, baby.
Don't forget to floss. All right.
That's so funny.
What was the best thing you saw this week?
Well, it's going to have to be from this month because, you know, I actually haven't been on the podcast this year yet.
That's
so
true. Good point.
We did this in the month of January is I did some one-on-one hangouts with my kids where nice. I took each of them to a Kings game on their own. And so it's just a one-on-one time hanging out with them. And both the kids really enjoyed it. Seeing my son kind of come alive, like actually really enjoying the sport for the first time. Because before he tolerated that, but he really wanted to go. So then we got him Kings gear. And so he got... You know, the whole experience there. And then my daughter came the next week and we did the whole thing there. I had ice cream for the first time in a long time and I felt terrible, like just no, dying.
That was just the queasiness you felt because you had kind of annoying people sitting next to you at that game.
They were the worst, but no. We sat right next to Brian and his son Matthew. And so, but it was super fun. And it was just having these moments with your kids and very pivotal times of their lives.
Yeah.
And just enjoying an activity outside of the house. It was really, really fun. And so we had a great time. And I will cherish this kind of these times together
100%.
Probably more than, you know, buying them something. Like we spent more money than we probably should doing these things. But like I will remember this for the rest of my life. And I hope that they remember this, these kinds of events for the rest of theirs.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. That's awesome. Love it. Judah, how about you?
The best moment I had this week is not anything deep or important, but I've been really trying to take better care of my health over the last few months, and a part of that includes going to the gym. And, like, you know, I think a lot of people understand that experience of, like, going to the gym and just kind of feel like you don't know what you're doing. You know, mm-hmm. you're just trying to figure out, what is this thing doing? What does that thing do? And so I was at the gym this week, and this big, like, buff dude, I mean, just huge dude, comes up to me and asks my advice on a particular machine. He's, like, bigger than me. He's, you know, and I was like, oh, I've arrived.
Yes, you have.
I'm him now.
Yes, you
and,
have.
I've been asked to leave a gym.
I believe that. I believe that. But this is really actually tied to kind of this bigger thing of I just feel better just in my body. I'm enjoying how good health feels. And you kind of have to, like, getting healthy sucks until, for a while, you know, and I'm just grateful to kind of, I feel like I'm finally stepping out of the, it's such a grind to try to take good care of myself and kind of have some habits that are just kind of ingrained now. And just really enjoying that.
Yeah.
What about you?
So throughout well, the last couple of years, I've had people at Bridgeway, dudes at Bridgeway, bug me and peer pressure me to try to come out and participate in F3, which if you don't know what F3 is, it's like free morning workouts for dudes. They happen all over the country and they happen all over our community. And they're so early in the morning.
They How start early at
five,
is early?
5:15.
Oh, no, I can't come.
Yeah. I'm a runner, and running is my main hobby, and I do it pretty much exclusively by myself. Mm. And I'm an extrovert. I crave social interaction. I love being with people. And I'm like, all right, I need to figure out ways to incorporate more people into my running. So I've been going out on Mondays. I cannot be bothered to do 5:15 multiple days a week. But I go out on Mondays at Wenzel Brown Park. There are a few Bridgeway dudes, a handful of other people. And it's just been awesome. Like, I wake up at 4:30, which I'm not a morning person. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so early. But like, my little thought as I'm trying to get up is, you won't regret this. And I never do.
Yeah.
And it's so fun being out there with those guys. And then they actually did a half marathon this last Saturday. And I don't do a lot of events, running events, maybe, you know, a couple per year, but the vibe at like the finish of an event is really fun. And this was small. This was just like 35 of us running, but it was almost better at a small one. Like, you finish and there's immediately people there fist bumping, celebrating and all of that. And then after I was done, you know, I'm hanging around waiting for different people to finish. And like, it's all a lot of people who know each other, and I'm new to the group. I don't know that many of them, but like, there were some Bridgeway people there. Our dude Levi Marcus was there, right? It was first ever half marathon, and then he went and played keys all weekend here at Bridgeway.
I love
and
Levi.
Just the encouragement and the support and just the camaraderie there, that like, some of these guys are just crazy fast. Some of them can barely do it, and it's all over the map. I love it.
When you guys get together, are you guys running, or is it like calisthenics, or is
so
it,
they do like calisthenics workouts, but I don't like those. You can't chat while you're doing that. Yeah, and if I'm going to do weights, I just like to do it at my own pace in a temperature controlled environment. But so the one I go to is exclusively running, and they have running sites all over the place, and I love it. So come out and run with us Monday mornings, 5:15. We'll give you a dumb nickname, and it'll be great. So
I'm so sorry. All the rest of my life at 5:15.
Standing meeting with your pillow.
Monday mornings.
So. All right. So we're gonna move on to Pastor Judah. You announced to our congregation this last weekend that after many years with us, you've decided to step off a staff. And you and I have obviously spent several hours together over the course of these last weeks processing all of this. But a lot of people heard this news for the first time, and it's possible if folks missed church this last weekend, they may be hearing it now for the first time. So can you just share a little bit about the decision, what went into that, and kind of where you're at now?
Yeah. 2025 was hard for many reasons. Some of them are just kind of come with the territory of ministry, right? Ministry is hard. But I also experienced just a lot of things in my personal life that were really difficult. My granddad died, my dad went missing, my girlfriend left me. That was hard. Mm. And kind of simultaneously as things were, just challenging in my life, kind of on all levels, I also moved further and further away from taking good care of myself, right? Everything from my diet to my sleep even my relationship with alcohol. Like, I was starting to go home and like need a glass of wine every night, you know, and then now 2 glasses of wine, and that wasn't okay. So as I'm kind of navigating this, I developed some panic attacks and an ulcer. That's been fun. So I just really started having conversations with God about, what do I need to adjust to kind of take good care of myself? And started making adjustments and kind of praying through that. Like I was sharing on the weekend, some opportunities came my way. That felt like they would allow me to kind of have a different rhythm, and kind of adjust based on what I need in this current season to be well. And so I started making some decisions and changing a lot of things. But one of the things that I decided to change was the kind of work that I'm doing professionally. And, you know, it's really hard because I really love ministry. But I recognized that I needed to pause and shift a little bit. And so I'm really been really grateful for the support from, you know, you guys and Lance, and really the Lord, that the Lord has given me permission to do this because, you know, my conversation with the Lord was like, Lord, if whatever you want me to do, I'll do. Like, whatever you tell me to do, I'll do. And, but I kept getting these prophetic words from folks here at Bridgeway, as well as outside of Bridgeway. That was the Lord giving me permission to like do what I needed to do to take care of myself. So that's what I've been, you know, trying to do and trying to figure out what does ministry look like in a different shape? What does it look like for me to do life from a place of rest and not just like trying to squeeze rest in? What does it look like to like eat vegetables? You know, that's a good thing to do.
Are you supposed to do that?
Yes. That's what I hear. So, you know.
You're a vegetarian. What else do you eat?
Note to self.
Leaves and grass and twigs and things. Yeah. And so, yeah.
All right.
So what was the point where you felt, or was there a situation or conversation where you felt like this is the Lord saying, be prepared for something different?
Yeah. So I think when some opportunities came my way, kind of seemingly out of the blue, mm-hmm. that felt like good fits for me. That was kind of the first time that my antennas were kind of like, ooh, what is this? Lord, are you inviting me into this? Like, what is this? But I also, like I said, I had received several prophetic words that I had been kind of processing with the Lord. And so kind of when I realized that I hadn't made the connection between like all three of those words that different people had given me at different times from like November to December. And so there was kind of a moment where I was like, oh, these are all the same thing. Mm. And then there have been a couple of moments where I just was like, you know what? I am so unhealthy right now. I feel so sick that like I need to make a major adjustment. Mm. And you know, when you're not well and you're like, what do I need to do to be well? Then everything gets put on the table. Yeah. And so,
yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit about just the response you've gotten from going public with this news? As things tend to go around here, things went in layers. Obviously, mm-hmm. you first asked for a meeting with Pastor Lance and myself, and then yeah. we went to senior staff and the staff and our key volunteers, and then you told your leadership team on a retreat, and then eventually the congregation. And I know you've gotten a lot of emails and different things in the last few days. Just talk to us about kind of what you've received back from the congregation yeah. as you've made this announcement.
Yeah, most people have been very, very, very sweet, very kind, and expressed, you know, the reality of mixed feelings, right? Like grief and sadness and also hope and support. And you know, I think one of the important things is to hold space for all of it, right? That we are allowed to feel multiple things about a circumstance or a situation. And also, like, I'm in this season where I'm learning that hard feelings don't necessarily mean that the circumstance is bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so people have sent me lots of stories of different ways that maybe we interacted or engaged or something like that. And that's been super sweet just to read those and kind of rehearse the memories. And I've been able to kind of process my own, all of the many ways that I've been just like so blessed to be here and so blessed by people in this congregation and staff in this congregation. So it's been emotional and it's been, some of it has been hard. And as I've really been processing, like, what does this mean for me? What does it mean for the church? There are parts of it that are really scary, right? Because, you know, ministry is a calling, but it is also a vocation.
Yeah.
And so really thinking about, like, you know, who am I outside of the church? And who am I outside of this role that, you know, unlike a lot of jobs, you know, when you go home at the end of the day and you're a nurse, you take off that nursing pin and you're just who you are. But in our line of work, you're never not a pastor. Hopefully you learn some good boundaries mm-hmm. and you learn to compartmentalize or whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, I am a pastor. When I'm in the grocery store shopping in aisle six, you know, somebody says, oh, Pastor Judah. Yeah. And then they look at my cart to see what I buy and nosy sales. So, I think, you know, really processing that, trying to think through, like, you know, how am I going to take care of myself and the people that I support financially? Really thinking about, like, what do I want to do in this season, right? Just because something becomes available to you doesn't mean it's the right thing for you to do. And then, you know, there is the, not guilt, but the weight of when you know that, you know, you've disappointed people or that people are sad because of a decision that you've made. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate the few people whose communications were not so nice because it's reminded me that there are some people who are happy. You know, you think about the relationships that I have here on staff, and those relationships won't end, but they will change if for no other reason than just access, right? Than just, I'm not going to be in staff meeting on a weekly basis to be able to do those touch point check-ins with, you know, folks that I really love and care about. And I think about, you know, my students and, you know, really having to, it's really important that pastors, acknowledge that God does not need us, right? Yeah. That he allows us to participate.
Right.
But you really wrestle with that when you're like, who's going to take care of my kids? You know, who's going to, mm-hmm. you know, and I just have to keep reaffirming that, like, God didn't need you to care for them. You know, he was doing it and just invited you to be a part. So,
You obviously stepped onto our staff at a pretty weird time. We were still in the middle of COVID. Your, like, test sermon you gave at BYA, was it whatever the park is up the street mm-hmm. here, that the ministry had not been run by a staff member in some time and, mm-hmm. and you know, was struggling a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it's grown in so many ways in the time that you've been here. As you look back at your, I don't know what the total will end up being, almost 6 years here on staff, particularly in BYA, what are you proud of? And what are some kind of really great memories you're taking away?
Well, the first thing I'm proud of has nothing to do with me, but it is just the caliber of person that tends to find themselves in BYA. Like the quality of our young adults mm-hmm. is, and I know that there is a level of bias that informs that position, but also I engage with a lot of young adult ministries across the region and always have. And there's something special about the type of people that are in the ministry, and I'm really proud of that. I think I'm also really proud of our consistency. There are not many ministries that are as consistent with their offering that we are. Most young adult ministries in the region do not meet weekly. They meet biweekly, sometimes very sporadically. There is not a consistent set of programming that they present. And we have been consistent almost my entire time here with our offering. I am proud that we have placed such an emphasis on the community relational dynamic more than anything else, right? I am proud that we actually have been a place where we attract a lot of people who are neurodivergent and who are kind of on the marginalization and on the margins of the kind of social fabric of society. So our folks who are sometimes a little bit more awkward, who sometimes are kind of developing in their social skills. There was a point where we had so many neurodivergent people that Pastor Candace and I actually like spent some time actually praying and being like, Lord, are we supposed to be like explicitly a neurodivergent ministry? Like, do we need to like market ourselves and say, hey, this is who we are, come here? Because it was just, it was an abnormal amount percentage wise compared to some of our peer ministries. And I'm really proud of that, that we have always taken care of folks who are a little bit different. I am proud of the ways that so many key staff members today have come out of BYA, and key volunteers in kind of the larger church have come out of BYA. Really proud of that. Proud of the amount of generosity in our students. And so.
That's awesome. What's one thing that you will either miss or take with you into your next endeavor?
Yeah. I will definitely miss preaching. I really like that part of the job. It's one of my favorite parts. It's probably my second favorite part. So I really miss that. And I think what I will take away from Bridgeway is that there can be a very large, well-run megachurch that can be healthy. Especially in terms of its staff and its operations. You know, Bridgeway is the biggest church that I've worked at so far. And one of the things I remember being really nervous about when I was candidating for the position and then had accepted was that I was going to peek behind the curtain of kind of the megachurch machine and see grossness, you know, and see messiness. And you know, that happens a lot in mega churches. And for sure, Bridgeway is not a perfect church, but it is probably the healthiest mega church, I would argue, that I've ever seen and I've gotten to see a lot. And so what I will take is this idea that that is possible, that you can be big and you can, you know, have a lot of things going on and that it does not have to cost an organization its integrity.
Yeah. And I'm really grateful that that's true.
Yeah.
I'm really grateful that I'm not afraid to show people what's behind what's behind the curtain.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Judah, I've obviously told you this privately on a number of occasions, but man, just couldn't be more grateful for your contributions over the years. BYA, Main Service, different projects you've been a part of, this podcast. And more than that, just your friendship, which has meant and continues to mean a great deal to me, that God brought us together, that God brought you to us, the relationship you and I have had. I mean, working together as closely as we have for all those years is a very special thing. And I think about things like our next gen team that meets together twice a month or different things that we collaborate on. And the thought of you not being in that room is a bummer.
Yeah.
You know,
and
you'll be missed, but you also know that I've got your back 100% and confident in God's calling on your life and excited for what's next for you. And man, you've made us a better church, and that legacy is going to continue.
Absolutely.
Appreciate y'all so much. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. We'll be right back.
So, Josh, I was thinking about how one of the hardest parts of leadership for any leader who's led over time is that lots of things change over time and require your like leadership to change. And you've navigated that over kind of your whole career, a lot of shift and change and having to lead through that. Whether that's staff members or locations or programming, even like change in your own title it's difficult. And so, I want to know first and foremost, what are some parts of leading through change that you feel like leaders or people maybe who are not in leadership don't think about?
That's a great question. I think a large part of change is inevitable, and oftentimes, depending on your personality, you will take change very, very differently. I am very change accepted. Like, I like change. I am probably more apt to change things just to change them than to be super like, no, this is the way we've always done it, so we're going to continue doing it that way, which has its pluses and minuses. But I think there's an emotional toll to change.
Yeah.
And especially when it's staff transitions, that can be really, really difficult, especially within a church context. Because within the church, not only is this where we work, but it's also where we worship. It's yeah. where we build our community. It's yeah. where we plant our lives. And so much of our lives are baked into our church community, but which also happens to be our job.
Yeah.
And so you have to navigate these things on a different plane where I can't make purely relational decisions with people. Like, well, as a church community, we just need to work our way through. Like, no, as a church staff member, we actually have financial accountability for doing our job. So yeah. we need to be working. And so it's this really weird tension you have to manage. And I think what can be difficult for folks on the outside to recognize is that there are business principles that we need to carry within the church
yeah.
because that's good stewardship of the church's resources.
Yeah.
But also how you do that can be highly relational.
Yeah.
And so, and that's kind of how I've approached change within our teams is, yes, the decisions are going to be more stewardship based, and whether we're helping somebody transition or they're choosing to transition. Luckily, I've had more people choosing to
yes,
transition.
Helping people transition.
Yeah,
isn't that kind?
Yeah, you learn that in church. you know, no matter what it is, there is a way to do it that is very Christ-centered and very relationship honoring. Without sacrificing the good decisions that need to be made.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's true. And I think, you know, Josh, like you, I'm pretty comfortable with change and certainly not into kind of sacred cows or doing things right. the way they always were. But I will say I've found, you know, a couple of things. Number one is I have to be very aware of people around me who are less comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And how much that can wear on people. And then number two, you have to recognize, I think all of us are a little more comfortable with change when we're the one driving it.
100%.
You know what I'm saying? 100%. Like I at least have a thought of where we're going, or I'm the one who gets to decide. Whereas for those that are along for the ride, it yeah. can be feel a lot more herky-jerky if we're not careful.
What are some things that you guys have learned then about how you lead people through changes that they don't have as much agency or autonomy over?
I think I've screwed it up a lot. Because it's never from a place of wanting to cause harm or frustration, sure. but very much my little, you know, squirrel puppy brain that's like, let's try this, let's try that, let's, you know, and then people are like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
But I found, I think in my more thoughtful moments, it's so simple, but so important, like communicating early and often.
Yeah.
Checking in. Hey, here's what I'm thinking. What do you think? Hey, do you see any problems with this? Inviting buy-in. I think those things are just critical to managing change in a manner that minimizes frustration, maximizes the benefit of the change, and then doesn't alienate people.
Yeah. If you lead change with a you just have to trust me mentality, you're going to be dragging people with you everywhere yeah. that you go. Yeah. And what you want is you want to empower them to be a part of the change rather than just recipients of the change. And so the way that you do that is communicating early and often, communicating with vision,
yeah,
but also really walking through with like, why is this worth that pain of change? Because yeah. The only changes that really get sustained, you know, enacted and then held on to is that it was worth the pain of the change.
Yeah.
Because it was actually better. If you are just thinking that this is just another way to do the same thing to get the same result, like you're just making it harder for people to follow.
Yeah.
And that's not better, and it's just like different. Whereas if you're leading, well, here's how we're going to be the most effective. Even if it's harder for us to do it this way, it's actually more effective for the individual. It's more effective for the ministry. It's more effective for the church. Like, that's a much better way to kind of lead people into why a change was necessary or why a change was good, because oftentimes we are drawn to let's do what's the most efficient, and so we will make efficient changes, but sometimes you sacrifice effectiveness for efficiency, and that's the wrong way. Like, you want to sacrifice efficiency for effectiveness. Yeah. That's the only way that it really works and is sustainable, because we can make it super efficient and nobody goes here anymore because it's not effective. Like, yeah. This is brutal.
Yeah,
service is done in 45 minutes, but we've lost the core of who we are. So people drift off and go to somewhere else. You know what I mean?
I also like that, like, in that is an acknowledgement that the change is painful. I think sometimes, especially kind of our charismatic and positive leaders, can, like, it can be tempting to say, like, okay, I just want to, like, let me just paint this as the, it's all positive and it's, and you shouldn't feel, you know, especially if the outcome is,
Sorry, I'm laughing because I've never been accused with leading with positivity.
But I think that that's like a real thing, right? And so, like, this idea of, hey, no, it does. It is going to suck for a while. It is going to be really painful for a minute, and that we can acknowledge that and say it's, as you said, it's worth it for sure.
Yeah.
I'm curious. What do you find, where do you find just kind of in general people's biggest hangups are with change?
You know, something I've heard you say before, Josh, which I don't know where who said it for. Maybe it's a Josh Ute original. I don't know, but the idea that people don't fear change, they fear loss.
Yeah. Ooh.
And
who
that,
said that?
I don't
remember where I've heard that.
Yeah, I've heard you say it. I know it's been said other places, but I think that is a really easy part to forget. Also, when we're the one driving the change.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, in your case, Pastor Judah, you've reflected a little bit on the very real loss that you feel in stepping away, and this is a positive change for you and it's a good thing, but you recognize there's a loss involved, and you're able to process those feelings and not feel the need to be, you know, happy clappy rainbows and puppy dogs about everything, but rather you can be excited about what's to come while acknowledging the loss.
Yeah.
It's a little different when you start talking about organizational change, because in the example of you, like, you made the decision. It was your choice. Like, there's nobody that you're going, man, well, this kind of came down the pipe and now I'm having to da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Whereas often when you talk about leading organizational change, whether it's people that report to you directly, whether it's invested volunteers, and, you know, in church setting, it's the congregation, it's affecting a lot of people who may or may not have the ability to get all the information they need and may experience that change as loss. Mm-hmm. So I think it is incumbent upon those of us who would lead change, and this applies to households, not just, you know, any level of organization. It's incumbent upon those to, number one, try to name and understand the loss and speak to that loss and validate the fears of that loss, and then hopefully be able to then share about kind of the plan or what's to come in a manner that helps people fear that loss a little bit less.
Yeah, and the loss can look like a lot of different
things.
Right. Sometimes it can be relational loss, but a lot of times it's the loss of control or the loss of knowing what to expect or knowing what's expected of them.
Yeah.
They think, okay, we've changed this system, we've changed this. I don't know what you want me to do anymore because this is all different.
Yeah.
And just acknowledging that different people have a different level of comfortability with expectation and control.
Yeah.
And I don't mean control from like a negative point of view. Yeah. It often gets used as a very negative thing, but I control a lot of my life.
Like, yeah. I mean, that like control. Agency, right?
That's a much better word. Much, you know, where that sense of agency of knowing that I know what's expected of me and I know how to follow through now is really important, and it's really difficult for different people. Now, for me as a leader, I'm not a highly detailed oriented person. And I have two staff members right now who are highly detailed people. Mm-hmm. And they're brand new to the team. And so they're asking me these highly detailed questions. And I'm doing my best to feed that need.
Yeah.
And I have a choice. I can either be annoyed that they're asking questions. It's like, well, it's your job. You just do it. Like, I don't know. Well, that's not helpful.
Yeah.
But what I can do is, like, as they have questions, how do I best answer this in ways that they can now understand the framework for making decisions as well? Yeah. Because it's that's what helps gives people actual agency, is them not just receiving and knowing what exactly to do, but knowing how to make decisions within that context. Yeah. That's where real agency comes back in. And that's where people really start to have that sense of control of their day, of their ministry, of what's expected of them, how they're preparing for this, how they're preparing for that. Like that. That is life-giving for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then as leaders, we need to lead at the level that they need, not at the level that we like.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really good.
I want to take a step out of kind of how you guys are leading through transition and change. And I'm curious about like kind of your decision-making criteria for change in your own lives. Like what are kind of some of the things that you are looking for or that kind of help you know when it's time to make a change, especially when you are not changing from something bad to something good, right? That it's not necessarily as easy as, like, you know, take your hand off the stove. So, you know, it's really obvious, like, yeah, you need to change that or you're going to burn your hand off. But when it's not necessarily, you know, that option A is bad and option B is good, how are you kind of thinking about how to know when it's time to make a change?
Yeah, for me, it's when I take the time to write out the goals and what do I want my life to look like? Mm. What do I want my legacy to look like? What do I want my kids to remember? What do I want? You know, those big questions. And then it's adjusting the things that don't help do that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So if that's a personal health piece, great. Getting thinner is not a sustainable motivator. Like it just eventually like, yeah, I'm fine. You know, like, I'm not dating anymore anyway, who cares? like there's really easy to get to a point where the short-term stuff doesn't matter as much.
Yeah.
As I talk through the COVID hack.
Judah is still alive. Yeah. Someday we'll figure out which of these buttons is the cough guard, yeah. But that day is not today.
Yeah. Anyway, whatever does not match that goal, whatever is going to actually hinder me from reaching that goal, that's going to be a bigger thing. So like personal health, I want to be present for my kids later in their life.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, I need to take care of me now.
Yeah.
In order for us to be able to retire, we need to have better financial practices now. We can't wait until we're near the end, like, oh, I better save some money. It's like, that's too late. That's just not how compound interest is great, but it doesn't compound that fast.
Yeah.
Like you gotta be invest. You know, these kind of principles we need to be enacting in our lives now to get to those long-term goals. And I think for me, it's looking at what do I want my long-term life to look like?
Yeah.
What do I want to be able to enjoy? What do I want to be able to do? What do I want to be able to sustain? And then making those necessary adjustments now, even if I don't like them now, even if they lead to short-term losses, but they lead to long-term gains,
yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think since you kind of talked big picture, I'll go a little bit more granular, is not quite the right word, but a little smaller. I think, you know, I think about the phrase that's used in the healthcare profession, first do no harm. I try to look at decision making and leadership through the lens of like, who is this going to affect and who is it going to bother? And is it possibly going to harm somebody? And what can we do to minimize that, whether it's in my personal life or my life as a pastor, where I am required to make a lot of decisions and be a part of changing things and trying new things. Okay, we want to try this new program. All right, we're going to write this new curriculum or create this new class or start this new kind of audio thing. All right, what is the demand going to be on other people? And is that sustainable? Is it appropriate? Is it going to cause people problems? And I want to get in front of those things so I'm not creating undue demand. You know, I mean, in my personal life, I'm a bit of a handful. I want to do things all the time and want to try different things and constantly out and about doing stuff. I mean, I talked about doing races or doing events. It's not just showing up. That's months of preparation,
yeah.
And that can affect my family. So I have to think about, all right, how can I minimize the impact of that? All right, if I want to do this, that means I need to handle these things before they get up in the morning,
right.
or things like that. And then I think from there to go,
like, who is this going to benefit? And there are things in life where you're like, all right, who is me doing a race going to benefit? It's going to benefit me. Like, that's it. There's not really a lot in it for anybody else.
And that's actually okay.
But that's okay. It's okay to have that.
That's
but I think when it comes to leadership, you just got to know, okay, is the juice worth the squeeze here? Is whatever we're going to have to go through to bring about this change, is it going to bring real benefit? And is that benefit in line with the values of the organization? Is it in line? I mean, we're Christians, for goodness sake. Is that in line with a sense of God's calling? Is it in line with treating people as Christ would have us treat people? Is it, what are my motivations? I don't know. I feel like now that I'm getting going, I could talk all day about all of these different, I think, things you have to think about. But I think it's so much about, I don't want to harm anybody.
Yeah.
I want to make sure the change is going to be worth the struggle. And I want to have a real sense that, like, yeah, this is in line with our values and in line with what God has asked us to do. And then also be comfortable with some change could be great, but doesn't have our name on it.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
I love that. I think one of the most freeing things for me has been remembering or acknowledging that actually most decisions that I have to make in life do not have kind of eternal life-altering consequences forever, most of them, right? And so what that allows me to do is for many decisions, and that may require some change, to be able to say, you know, I don't always know if this is the right change to make. If it's not, I will realize it at some point, and I'll adjust,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and that's been really good. Freeing. And so I'd love to close this segment by just asking you guys, if you have a story that you want to share about a time where you had to make a change, whether in your personal life or professional life, that was really, really scary to make. And then did it end up being the right decision or change, or did it not? And what did you learn? You know, I've had to make several kind of big decisions over time.
Yeah.
And sometimes they were the right decision. And I look back and I'm like, yes, I'm glad I made that. And sometimes I look back and say, I was definitely misreading what needed to happen. And so, want to open that up to you guys.
So a little over 7 years ago now, I left our last church in Nevada and stepping down from that position. And we had been going through a whole lot of church unhealth at that point. And I got into some really bad practices, just personally and professionally. Nothing like unethical, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't the life or testimony that I wanted to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I was struggling really, really hard, and there was not a good pathway forward for me to reach health there. And it was time for me to go. And it was the best thing for them as well as for me. And so stepping out of that, but we stepped out without another job. And so it was super scary,
yeah,
because it's like, I've got two kids, a wife, and a mortgage, and that bank calls every month for that check.
They want their money.
They want their money.
If you have more mortgages than jobs, I hear that's...
You know, it's not optimal.
Not Dave Ramsey approved.
It's not Dave Ramsey approved. And so for me, what really went into that was, how do I hear God's voice beyond the circumstance? Because if I was just doing the circumstance thing, I think I would have tried to stay while looking for something else and remain incredibly unhealthy and ultimately probably unhirable because of the level of unhealth that I was at that time. And so I look at what we have done as a church at that point and realized I was a part of something really great for a time, but that season had ended. And it was really important for me to leave at that point.
Yeah.
And so we took a big step of faith and moved back to California from Nevada, where Nevada has no state income tax. But if you move back to California...
They also don't pay well in Nevada.
Right, but if you move back to California with no job, you have no income tax as well. So if you have no income, there's nothing to tax. So I figured it out. But
but
we moved back, and we were looking at apartments. It was cheaper to buy a house than it was to rent an apartment.
Yeah.
because we had all this equity in our house in Nevada. And so like our mortgage is significantly smaller than most people's apartment rent on a one or two bedroom apartment right now. And God just provided that. And so we're able to lock that in. Then 6 months later, the job at Bridgeway became available to me, and I was able to take that. And you just start to see how God moved us and how he took care of us, even in the midst of, I'm making this big change. I don't know how this is going to work, and we don't know how long we're going to be in California. It might be a short time, it might be a long time, no clue. And then God just kept providing. And the things that I thought I wanted to do, the doors kept closing on that. It's like, oh, that's a little disappointing. But now I look back on it, and I look at where those organizations are, and oh, thank you, Jesus. You love me so much. You closed the door and broke my heart early so that I can be somewhere that I'm really supposed to be. And that really has been my story at Bridgeway, is that this is where I knew I needed to be. And Bridgeway did not really need me as much as I needed Bridgeway, and not just financially, but just like emotionally and spiritually and mentally. Like, I have experienced so much healing and restoration here that this is where I needed Bridgeway way more than they needed me. And God protected me from my own decisions before getting to this place.
Ain't that good? Don't you love when you look back and you see how the Lord protected you from your 100%. Own decisions? What about you, Pastor Brian?
It's so funny just hearing, reflecting on that last part. I definitely have a couple of like, heartbreak about like jobs I didn't quite get that, that Garth Brooks was onto something, man. Some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers. I'm like, thank you, Lord. But and certainly would say the same about my own relationship to Bridgeway. But I'll give you one that was a necessary change and a good change that was handled poorly. In fact, it is one of my biggest regrets in my time at Bridgeway, was the way we handled this particular change. Is when we finally got to the point where we were moving forward with women in ministry, an egalitarian perspective, affirming God's call on women to be pastors, which we obviously affirm at this church and believe that is the most biblical view. We did a lot of work on the elder board. We did a faith and culture about it. And then we, you know, made Pastor Heather and Pastor Ashley the first female pastors. And this was a wonderful change and continues to be a wonderful change. And now we have Pastor Kayla and Pastor Candace and, am I forgetting anybody? Oh my gosh. But we have, you know, multiple female pastors, and hopefully, Lord willing, that will grow as time goes on. But back when we were deciding, okay, how are we going to talk about this publicly? It's not that we never talked about it, and certainly we advertised the Faith and Culture series, and it was pretty obvious the direction we were going. But we made the decision to say, hey, we just want to, you know, this is how it always should have been. Well, that's how we want to treat this. Right. These women have been pastoring for years. We're finally just acknowledging it. So we decided to be pretty understated about the way we talked about it publicly. Not because we were trying to hide anything, but if anything, we were kind of trying to not make a big deal out of it, because we wanted it to seem normal.
And not the policy so much itself, but also specifically the women who became
pastors. The title
pastor,
changes
the
and all
title
that.
Changes
we didn't do a like bring
muted.
Them up on stage and now we're calling them pastors and
giving
this,
them
and this
any
and
honor
that.
In that way.
And we honored them a bunch behind the scenes and all of that. But the real problem with that was it created a lot of confusion in the congregation, because there was not good explanation for why we were making the change. We're fielding all these questions. Oh my gosh, is Bridgeway ignoring scripture? Is Bridgeway, you know, accommodating culture and all of this? Which obviously that was not the case. Right. But I don't really fault people for thinking that it was, because we didn't do a good job of explaining it. Yep. So and I take the lion's share of that responsibility. I say we, but I really take a lot of that responsibility personally, because I was one of the key people driving how do we roll this out. And again, my heart was, I want to honor the fact that these women have been pastors for years and we're finally just calling them that. I want to honor the fact that this has been God's design from the beginning. We're just catching up. So I don't want to make it sound like this big thing. Well, that was a bad decision. And it was a great example of how it's the right decision. It was the right thing to do. I obviously have my only regret is that we didn't do it sooner. And but we communicated about it really poorly, and that kind of sunk it. So not sunk it, but it created a lot of problems.
And I think that's the thing with change and how you communicate change really does matter. what ends up happening when there's gaps is that people fill them in with the worst versions of reality. And those, and when now, without clarity, those rumors turn into facts and turn into, I know because I have an inside track on blah, 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 blah. And they don't. And I think what I really value about Bridgeway is its transparency. And we missed on that with the women in ministry because we weren't being super transparent, not out of like trying to protect anything.
There's nothing to hide.
And we kind of like, well, we just did a whole faith and cult. Like, what else do you need? But it wasn't so clearly communicated that it left a lot of room for assumption. And what it looked like is that overnight, women became pastors. It was like, no, over 25 years, women became this is a really – we did not communicate the length of research, the length of going back and forth, the depths of the conversations as – at the realm the that was why, necessary.
The why those particular women got title changes.
The why and the how, like we missed because we didn't want to make it a bigger deal than it needed to be, but it deserved to be a much bigger deal than we made it to be.
All right. As you say, Pastor Judah, it's your last episode. I just stepped on your attempt to sign us off.
That's all right.
Sign us off.
Yeah, look, I am so grateful for the opportunity that I've had to be in this family, to be a part of this family, to both receive and contribute. And, you know, what I'm so pleased about, again, is that this is a change that has some, like, hard elements and some emotional elements, but it is not a change that is mired in controversy and drama. I'm grateful for that, and I think that that is only possible because I am transitioning out of Bridgeway Christian Church, and it is such a testament to who we are as a church and who we are as a community that we actually have had several major staff transitions over the years that have been so healthy. I think about that I was telling Pastor Ryan, I said, I followed your blueprint. You know, I was telling Jake, one of our former worship directors, you know, I followed your blueprint that I was able to learn how to leave, you know, from other folks who have left before and from the precedent that Bridgeway has to do change well as we can, not always perfectly, but as well as we can. So I am so grateful to have been able to be on this podcast and to our listeners, thank you for your support. We're really excited about where this podcast is going and kind of the vision for it down the line and want you to keep listening. But I love you, Bridgeway, and I love you, Josh, and you, well, you're Josh over here and you're Brian. Love you both. Love this church and I'm excited for what God is going to do. So with that, thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next time. Thank you.